Welcome to a special edition of Straight Talk Africa. I'm your host, Vincent McCord. Today, we'll examine how tech startups are using artificial intelligence. Tech giants Google and Microsoft weigh in on how they support startups using AI. And founders discuss the importance of ethical and strategic uses of artificial intelligence. This episode is part of Startup Africa, Voice of America's award-winning TV series about tech startups across the African continent.
Creating content has become so easy. Our digital marketing manager told me these days he just must producing content using ChatGPT.
So the AI, you could use it both ways, in two different ways. One is to use it as it is, when it collects all the data from online and you just get something random, or you could train it to exactly what you want.
The AI technology is an output of the inputs that are the training data. So I think the fact that the questions that are coming up now around bias, around being very intentional about thinking about that, is perfect, right? That is what we should be talking about. That is what should be taking up a lot of oxygen when it comes to the conversation about AI.
Tech is needed, like tech is life. Like right now, everything that we are doing is tech. Like you can't really do anything without tech. So I think the reaction should be embracing it. Seeing the best way in which we can harness it to improve us and to improve the things that we do as well. But not rather sort of, we don't want big tech, no technology in our space, because like you can't stop it. Like this is like an idea whose time has come. Like there's no stopping to that.
We talk a lot about responsible AI and we attribute that to the large tech companies, right, that are the ones that are building these foundational models and are leading the charge when it comes to AI. But it's also up to us as AI practitioners, the smaller companies that are leveraging these large language models, that are leveraging AI, to think about how we can use it responsibly.
So the AI, you could use it both ways, in two different ways. One is to use it as it is, when it collects all the data from online and you just get something random, or you could train it to exactly what you want. Because of the fact that I work with big brands, I work with a lot of people, I can't depend on a neural network for it. I have to train it with my own data set. So that was what I did. And I understand fashion. I understand, my first ever company was a fashion line back in the UK. So I've been there before, and I love fashion a lot, so I understand what outlook means, what perception of all these things mean, and how you could tell stories through fashion. So that was what I was trying to do with the patterns. And it's easier to create patterns with AI because you can create as much random variations as you want and unique as you want, depending on how you know how to use it. So that was me experimenting initially. Today I have 2,500 unique patterns that I've never even put out there, you know, for the future, just many things that you could do, you know, with the tech. So that was part of the reasons why I use the tech to create it, but also to show that you could use innovative technology to augment, to shorten your time span, or just to imagine some things that you can't just see physically in that. So yeah, that was why. The inspiration is just literally African, understanding the African culture that you come from. Everything that I feel in the world that has been inspired when it comes to creativity came from Africa, you know. So that's mostly where I tap into when I'm trying to create certain things. But mostly, I like to make them more unique, more futuristic, more advanced. So I feel like for African visual artists, they need to experiment and do a lot of research about it, because at the end of the day, it's just a tool. It's never the final output. It's not a replacement. It's just something to enhance what you currently do. That's how I use it. I just rebranded the entire Bongita using AI. But you cannot create what I created with AI, because you don't even know how I did it. That's because I created it with my own data sets as a tool. And that wasn't the only tool I used. I used Photoshop. I used many other things to do it. So if you can think about it as a tool that is very advanced, then you will scale, you know. And that's worked in many ways for me. So I feel like just explore, experiment, and do your research.
Creating content has become so easy. our digital marketing manager told me, these days he just mass producing content using ChatGPT. Yeah, he's able to create, you know, videos for TikTok. He's able to, you know, to generate content so fast. I think it's going to be different. However, we still need to localize, especially for us who are focusing with the informal sector. I think we can only, or rather anyone focusing on that sector, the low income sector, you have to bring them, you know, you have to really innovate on the product before you bring in the technology bit.
Yeah, not either. but I can speak to it, I guess. I'm Kaylee Emmerich, and I'm the head of Google for Startups in North America. In 2020, we were working with a cohort of about 50 Black founders here in the U.S. and kind of running an accelerator program, and that's when the pandemic hit. And right away, we saw that those founders we were supporting, they needed an infusion of capital fast. One of the really special things about our Black Founders Fund is that we have seen that the founders that we fund, they are solving real problems in their community. So a huge majority of the founders that we've funded, they're in spaces like healthcare and health tech, education tech, and fintech, so financial services. And that's because it's problems that they saw at home growing up and that they wanted to solve for their communities, like fintech, building generational wealth for people who have been traditionally locked out of access to capital, things like that. And so it's a very inspiring group to work with because they're solving real problems for their communities. Some examples would be Varuna, a water sensor and AI company in Texas. Shea Fabode, he has developed, using AI, sensors that can alert municipalities and city governments, state governments, to possible issues with clean water getting to constituents. And so he's doing that based on his lived experience where a child of his was impacted by unhealthy water. So a real problem that he saw in his community, and he's using the power of technology like AI to solve. Similarly, Damola, the founder of Plural, is using AI and technology to democratize the way that bills are passed here in the U.S. and abroad. One of the things that I'm really proud of and love to see Google doing is that we have supported these founders through many phases of their journey. Being a startup entrepreneur is really difficult. There's high highs and low lows. And founders like Damola, we've supported since 2017 when he participated in one of our early stage programs called Black Founders Exchange that helped him pivot his business and get his first investment check. Flash forward to 2020, he was a part of our first cohort of the Black Founders Fund here in the U.S., which helped him, again, reach another milestone. And now he's very engaged in our alumni programming. So supporting founders over a long, you know, through every phase of their journey is really important to us and something that we're excited to continue.
Can I start with like my story of being Nigerian? Okay, that's a good question. Yeah, so the work that we, how should I phrase that with a question? At Plural, we help organizations manage and understand public policy. So that's legislation, regulations, in the U.S., but also in several international jurisdictions, including Nigeria and South Africa. My name is Ade Damola Ogundekpe. I am the co-founder and the CEO of a tech startup based here in the U.S. called Plural. What inspires me about the work that we're doing at Plural is not just the financial return that we're hoping to get by creating a scalable business, it's also the social return. And the reason it's important is because public policy dominates every single thing that we do as citizens and residents of the world, of your individual country, of your state, of your jurisdiction, your local municipality. We are a governed people. We have decided in the world that governance is critical. So providing the necessary tools and software to reduce opacity and create transparency will make our ability collectively, right? I know we work with organizations, but collectively to create an opportunity for us to have a better understanding of what our politicians are doing, how that actually impacts us, impacts industries, so that we can help work and create better and shape better policy for the present and for the future. So our goal primarily, if you really reduce it, is around creating transparency, right? Access to information, removing that opacity. And we fundamentally believe that a more transparent government from the perspective of governance information, governance data, legislation, regulation, statutes, a better understanding of that is a net positive and a net good for democracy. At the end of the day, what we're looking for from elected officials is to keep their promises, to pass legislation, to make them into law, and to do the work, right? That is governance, and that is governing. So as an everyday person, being able to use one of Plural's tools to be able to say, hey, did this person introduce a bill? Was it passed into law? What was the information in that bill? How does it impact me? All of that can be done on our platform for free, for everyday people. So they would go on our website, they would create an account, for free, no cost, and they'd be able to run those queries, run those searches, and use AI to summarize the legislation that their elected official has maybe introduced or sponsored, and get an understanding of, does this actually have a positive, negative, neutral impact on me, my family, my community? We've ingested millions of policy documents into our database, and that's what we use to train our algorithms and to train our models. We have historical policy text that goes back into the 1970s that's part of our database. So that's the kind of the way that we're able to use AI to have a greater understanding of what is in newer text, right? Newer introduced bills or bills that are newly introduced, because we've trained our data historically on millions of policy information, and that's legislation, regulations, executive orders, statutes, so on and so forth. Any governance data has went into our that we've ingested into our database has went into our training models. We've been doing this work for the last several years, and we've leveraged natural language processing, and we've tried to really push the envelope in innovation when it comes to being able to understand policy information faster, simpler, so on and so forth. But with large language models, foundational large language models coming to market, and startups like us being able to leverage them and apply them to use cases like ours, it's really sped up the process and sped up the opportunity. The amount of work that we've done in the last 3 years, we were able to do in 3 weeks because of large language models and leveraging those foundational models and training them for the purposes of understanding policy text and policy information more effectively. The reason why at Plural we decided to expand our work into Nigeria, South Africa, the African continent, as a whole, going from the U.S. to the continent, is because of my background as a Nigerian American. So I was born in Nigeria and I immigrated to the U.S. when I was 5. And that experience and growing up in the U.S. and going back and forth between the U.S. and Nigeria has always given me a global perspective. I've always looked at everything from an entrepreneurial perspective through a global lens. The world has shrunk. Information is more democratized. So I've always had that perspective growing up. So when we decided, when we were thinking about where do we expand to next, right? We want to pull in as much governance data as we possibly can, not just again here in the U.S., but internationally. We immediately said, let's go to the African continent. Let's start with Nigeria. Let's start with South Africa. Over the last 3 months since we launched in Nigeria, we've seen about half of our revenue come from the continent, specifically come from customers in Nigeria. We're showing that there is a commercial appetite in other countries, again, specifically Nigeria, for the kind of work that we do, but also showing that there is a large market opportunity for software companies, for consumer companies, so on and so forth. So we're hoping that there is a tailwind that's created for startups that are on the continent, that are in Nigeria, that are working on creating great innovation. So a lot of people are saying that Africa is going to spearhead the next digital revolution, and I 100% agree with that. I spend about 2 months a year in Nigeria, 6 to 8 weeks a year in Nigeria, and the amount of innovation, the amount of energy, the amount of grit, diligence of the founders that I meet and connect with and that are my friends in Nigeria is unparalleled. There's also resources right, that are being poured into Nigeria. There's a lot more that needs to be poured in. But if you even just look at, accelerators in the U.S. like Y Combinator, that have a lot of Nigerian founders and Nigerian-based companies going to Silicon Valley, spending time going through the Y Combinator accelerator, and then being able to take those learnings back and grow those businesses, it's incredible. And I think it's because there is a clear understanding from a market perspective that Africa is next, right? That Africa has the talent, the resources, the fortitude, the will to be able to drive the next level of innovation. And I'm excited to be a part of it, especially because I can see it. I have a good perspective of all of it. So I'm really just excited about the role that Africa is going to play in innovation.
In times of change, when the world seems uncertain, and what we hear doesn't reflect what we see, we seek the truth. When we are told only part of the story, we lose trust. In moments of crisis, our dreams, hopes, and wishes for a better tomorrow depend on a free press. At Voice of America, we bring you the stories that people take risks to see. We connect the world and unite it with truth. At Voice of America, we show you the whole picture.
You're watching VOA's Red Carpet. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. Thank you so much for joining us each week right here on Red Carpet. We bring you the latest in...
One of the things we are looking at is like AI, artificial intelligence. It's coming on us. So that's where algorithms should, we are looking at how to use technology. But sometimes, let me say, to slow it down for our people, because like finance, marketing, some job can be wiped out. And without our values, the interest of what we want. So we have a mission to protect Africa against this machine, these robots. And we need them, but we need to use them for us. Otherwise, again, and I'm sincere here, Africa, people sometimes say it's Africa time. But if Africa doesn't wake up, the same way people waked up on COVID, like, hey, let's do this. We should wake up on technology and use it the right way and protect our people, because it's not sleeping.
Anything that is abused can have its adverse side effects.
Yeah.
And tech is not, should be also one of the things you perceive with this sort of notion.
Yeah.
That we need to look at it in such a way that, for instance, I'm one of the few people who is advocating for, guys, stop AI, chill, understand what we are building first.
Yes.
Let's understand what we are creating in the world. Let's all take a grand hiatus from AI. We just say, guys, we're taking 2 years, the whole world, chilling.
Yeah.
No people are going to fund AI projects. You know, you can still experiment with it, but let's try to understand also from a research perspective, what are we building here?
Mm-hmm. As much as, yes, there's AI, but you know, this creativeness doesn't come from the AI.
Mm.
It's human beings who are super, super, super creative. So encouraging that.
Yeah.
But you just need to be alert and see, how are we using tech? Mm. How can we use it to our advantage? Mm. So let's just know that it's a tool, and how do we use it for our good?
Yeah. I think
totally
agree.
You know, there's a huge relationship between Microsoft and artificial intelligence. The Microsoft Fast Accelerator program was basically an AI program. If you go into that program without an AI capability, you are leaving that program with an AI capability. So that means it makes you think outside of the scope of what you were already doing. You think about how you're going to employ artificial intelligence into making your business bigger than it normally would be. So, of course, it was instrumental to our AI capability, which is something that's going to be game-changing. So that was where we started thinking of how could we use our employ AI to make our service more efficient. It was in that program that we developed with the accelerator the capacity to use to do the remote inspection service.
My name is Andrew Kwa. I'm the CEO and founder of Regulus Incorporated. Yes, so I think we see AI a lot as our future, right? Because what we are doing, a platform for emerging market pharmacies, there's a lot of data coming in. There's a lot of AI stuff, learning that we can do. And the more we're able to learn from the data that we have, the more we're able to avoid some mistakes, the more we're able to predict better the future. So we see this company, future being AI. We don't know exactly where it's going to play, but like we see it's embedded in our payments and everything that we are trying to do.
I'm Davina Yeo. I work for the Microsoft for Startups team, and I'm the Startup Global Enablement Lead, where I lead teams that help startups gain access to the right set of resources and experts that can help them succeed. The Microsoft for Startups Founders Hub is basically our global platform, where we give access for startups, access to technology and tools to allow them to be able to accelerate their innovation and reduce the barriers that startup founders normally face when starting their business. Africa specifically, we have over 1,600 startups since we launched that initiative about a year ago. What's really interesting as well is a lot of these startup founders, almost 83% of them are early stage founders and are just starting for the very first time. So it's great to be able to work and support them as they're in their phase of creating their new solutions and products. I think that we're definitely leveling the playing field. I think today, with the access to all the leading AI tools, this is a great way for African startups to be able to use AI, infuse them in their solutions, and to be able to solve some of these world-pressing problems.
I'm Munyancha Crispinus, the founder and CEO at Clinic Pesa. For me, from my own perspective, where I stand, looking at the big investments that are going from big tech into AI today is a positive thing. We know at some point some of these AIs will actually be open sourced. And once they are open sourced, for us who do not have the investments to actually invest in the AIs, we will be borrowing these AIs, customizing them to what we want to actually run the business. Everyone is actually running to invest in Africa. And they're investing in Africa because then there is an opportunity. It's a gold mine, you know. For us as African startups, we don't necessarily have to expand our wings to the globe for us to be successful. Personally, I believe in a market where you actually created enough impact before you can actually cross to another market. Why Africa needs Clinic Pesa is the burden is still heavy, you know. We need that percentage of coverage, the people who are covered, the people who are protected, to grow from the 2.8% to grow to 80%, you know. So companies like Clinic Pesa are typically contributing a key value in actually making sure that households and families are able to protect and cover their beloved ones, such that at the point of need, at the point of illness, they have financing ready so that they can be able to afford the care that they actually need you receive. Looking at Clinic PESA from a faith perspective, it means that the dream of seeing Africa or even the starting point of Uganda having a better coverage is all gone into the ground. Our ultimate success is typically seeing every household holding a Clinic PESA.
So do we have plans to move into other countries that are in Africa? The answer is yes, but I'm not going to show my cards on which countries we go to next. But I will say that if you are in any country in Africa that has governance information, that... I'll stop there.
Okay.
Let me not put a sales pitch on there. How AI-powered legislative tools work for us is what we do is we first ingest all of this policy data. Policy information historically is unstructured, it's opaque, and what we do is we ingest and we structure all of that data and make it machine readable. And because of that, we can create better analyses, we can create better summaries, a better overall understanding by using and leveraging AI and applying it to this data set. So for us, applying AI to this information is not just great for social impact and great for business, but it's, I think, a responsibility. For folks that are in our position, that are uniquely positioned to be able to do this work. We're in a situation now where if you are an AI practitioner, right, we look at ourselves at plural as AI practitioners. We're folks that are applying AI for practical, real-world problems and to solve those problems and to create social and financial return based off of that innovation. Being able to leverage these large language models has transformed not just our business, but it's transformed the impact that we're able to have and level the playing field for organizations that need to be able to do this work and provide information to citizens, residents of countries that that really need this information. Yeah, the threat of bias in AI is a real one. I think that when you look at how we have historically trained AI, it's with existing data, and existing data has flaws in it, right? Sometimes the information that we're feeding into AI models is already flawed and biased and the technology. But when it comes to how people are deploying it and using new training data, fresh training data with existing large language models, like we are, it's up to the practitioner. The practitioners of AI have to be responsible. We talk a lot about responsible AI, and we attribute that to the large tech companies, right, that are the ones that are building these foundational models and are leading the charge when it comes to AI. But it's also up to us as AI practitioners, the smaller companies that are leveraging these large language models, that are leveraging AI, to think about how we can use it responsibly, right? How we can remove bias from the data that we're inputting into it. And for us, as a Black-led company, we think about this every single day, because it's not just about, for us, you know, using AI in you know, some sort of fun way. We're using AI to actually solve real problems. We're using AI to actually create lasting change, which is around governance and information and how we're able to live our lives as citizens and residents of different countries around the world. So we take that very, very seriously, and we feel that responsibility. And I would urge that any AI practitioner that is in this tech environment to really think about that and think about how they can step up to the challenge and not just have it be the tech companies, that the larger tech companies that have to carry that weight.